Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, are Arsenal back under Mikel Arteta? Who got the best boss during the international break? Norwich, Aston Villa or Newcastle? We'll ask, why is football still marking its own homework? And why the National League is the place to be? This is The Game. Hello again, welcome back to The Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Wisencroft alongside Gregor Robertson and Tom Clark. We'll also be joined by Molly Hudson very shortly to discuss the women's game. But what a night it was in the FA Cup. First round replay between Stockport and Bolton. We'll start there because it was one for the ages. 5-3 after extra time following a 2-2 draw in the first leg. But Edgeley Park was electric. The scenes were exactly the kind of community experience that remind us all what the FA Cup is about. I got through the intro without saying the word magic, but it was a great game. Of course, it's a very important tie in the area as well, and maybe pointed, Gregor, to the strength of the National League right now. Tell us why.
Well, there's just a huge bottleneck building up of extreme quality, really, in the National League. It's actually getting to the point where maybe the top 10 teams in the National League are arguably stronger than the bottom half in League 2, in the division above. And that's all because there's one automatic promotion place and one goes up through the playoffs, and also because of the level of investment that's now flooding into clubs at that level. Stockport, an example, I was there at the weekend actually for my journeyman column. Local businessman Mark Stott, he's probably the most successful businessman to come out of that town, in fact, and he's done everything right. I mean, ominously good kind of structure he's put in place. A guy called Simon Wilson, who used to work for the City Group for the best part of a decade, helped build clubs in Melbourne, Japan, New York, and in the early days at City, and he's been brought in as director of football to help build Stockport County.
Wow.
Absolutely, yeah. And they, you know, in the last fortnight or so, we should say that they're 11th in the league. despite all this investment, it is a notoriously hard division to get out of. But in the last couple of weeks, they hired Dave Challoner as manager, who dropped down from Hartlepool United in League Two, probably partly because of the money, but also because of the vision and the sort of the potential to take Stockport back to the Championship. The goal is to do it in 7 years. They were there in the 90s. That was their kind of halcyon days. And also Anthony Sarcevic, who was Bolton Wanderers captain until a few weeks ago, had a fallout with Ian Evatt, and he's just helped his new club get past them in the FA Cup. So that's, you know, that kind of underlined their intent, but it's been going on for the best part of, I think Stock bought the club in January 2020, and they've made some really eye-catching signing players from League 1, League 2. And the other thing that to note is they don't really have any spending rules at that level. You know, I asked Simon Wilson about that at the weekend. He said you've basically got to provide a business plan and say, show how you can pay your tax bill, which is obviously different to League Two. So they have more spending power than League Two teams. So, you know, it makes for a really exciting league. And, you know, we've spoken, you know, everyone knows about Wrexham this year and the Hollywood adventure that's beginning there. But you've got clubs like Dagenham and Redbridge, whose investors include a guy who is a shareholder at the New York Yankees, and Tim Howard, who's the former Manchester United goalkeeper. You've got Grimsby Town, who are under new ownership, and, you know, lots of, I think, 11 ex-league clubs now in that division, just all bursting, trying to get through that bottleneck at the top. So, as I say, it makes a really exciting league, but I'm not sure how sustainable it is, actually, to have, you know, a direction of travel in which the fifth division is possibly going to be stronger than the fourth.
You all know I'm a negative Nelly anyway, but let's be honest, alarm bells are ringing for me already. I mean, they were with Wrexham, you know, but at least Netflix is going to pay for the club to be run from here on out. But I mean, what happens to the other teams in the league, Tom? We've already seen Bury. We've already seen Macclesfield and what happened with them. There actually now surely needs to be a control on spending in the National League as well if we're going to protect the community value of the clubs, and that's exactly what we saw at Edgeley Park.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's another element, isn't it? You say about the community. Stockport's a massive club. It's a massive area in the northwest. I can remember going to games at Stockport where, you know, Stockport were the big scary team that Lincoln had to go and play against, and often that transpired on the pitch by getting beaten 7-1, 5-1 and all those kind of things. It's very difficult, though, I would say, to put regulation in when part of the drama comes from that dream of reaching the Football League. You know, if I think back to Lincoln's promotion, you know, we've experienced as a club lots of great times in the last few years, but as a fan, nothing will beat getting promoted back to the Football League that in that season that we did, even though we then went on and won League Two a few years later, and that we're now in League One playing great football. Nothing will beat that season when we won the National League. But we did that with investment coming in, with an FA Cup run. So it would be quite hard, I think, to put a cap on, because you're putting a cap on a dream as well as, I understand the point about how sustainable it is. And obviously, you know, we're looking at that league table. Greg has mentioned Stockport, Wrexham, Dagenham and Redbridge. They're 11th, 9th and 7th. They're not even up in the, I think, is the playoffs finishing 6th? 7th, yeah.
Extended.
Yeah, so that's incredibly difficult. But we talk so much, don't we, about the Championship and the dream of reaching the Premier League. You know, this is almost the equivalent for a lot of these clubs and these areas. You talk about that as well. The areas and these communities, to have a club in the Football League, that's a massive thing as well. So just playing devil's advocate, it's a difficult thing if we're going to be putting a cap on that, because you're putting a cap on a dream as well as financial cap.
There is a working group actually trying to envisage what a salary cap would look like in the National League from next season. You know, salary cap that was agreed in League Two has already been abolished, so I'm sceptical as to whether that will progress. But one thing I should add is that, you know, it's an eclectic bunch. It's not just guys, millionaires, throwing money at it. There's clubs like Boreham Wood and Bromley who have been really, really smart. They've set up huge academies that provide education and football and, you know, for 16 to 18 year olds, and that brings in a lot of funding. They often employ their players both as coaches and players, so they can give them two contracts. And, you know, there's been some really intelligent thinking. I said this to Simon Wilson at the weekend. He said, you find that there's a lot of lazy leadership at the top level because they can afford to be lazy. You know, when you're working at this level, you've got to be smart and think on your feet. So there are clubs like that. Notts County are owned by a couple of Danish brothers who own like a statistical analysis company. So there's a very data-driven model. It's just a fascinating league this year, absolutely fascinating. But what we should also say is they were outstanding last night. Mm-hmm. Absolutely outstanding. I mean, after a calamitous start, you know, two down in 6 minutes, one of the worst own goals you'll see in a long time as well, to come back and, you know, thoroughly deserve it in the second half and in extra time. Outstanding night for Stockport. And I think it does underline the fact that they're on the rise, but it, you know, you can be on the rise and still falter in this league. That's the thing about it. You have to be, you know, teams have got to almost 100 points before and not finish top. Wrexham, in fact, were that team. Fleetwood beat them by a few points, I think, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And I think Wrexham had like high 90s points and they didn't go up because they lost in the playoffs. It's just the hardest league in the country to get out of.
Just very quickly on it, should there be more automatic promotion spots?
Absolutely. But the whole, I mentioned this in my piece, it would require the League Two clubs to vote for it. So, yeah, you know, turkeys and Christmas come to mind.
Yeah.
You also have to be really, really bad to drop out of League Two. There's always, every year there's one club. We're talking about, you know, spending rules in the National League. It's not doing any favours to the clubs in League Two. There's always one club. This year it's Oldham. I mean, last year Southend were nightmare. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about Bury and Macclesfield. There's always at least one club, Scunthorpe or another this year, who are being run into the ground really by incompetent ownership. So there's only one other relegation place after that. So as I say, you have to be really bad. That's why I think it's just a bit unhealthy that you have to be so bad to drop out of the league which
I just think it's a bit of, you know, we don't see it because obviously there's four divisions there, but we're complaining about the Super League and not being able to get into it, and then actually effectively the EFL, which has what, four relegation spots in other divisions, you get to the bottom of it and no, it's one in, one out. You know, it's like a full nightclub. Come on, do me a favour.
No, but you'd have to change. You're right, but you'd have to, thinking about it, you'd have to change the trickle down of the money, and you'd have to break that separate divide between National League and Football League. And as Gregor hints at there, the big lads sat around the table aren't going to be welcoming in the guys on the outside.
There just needs to be a rule from the FA that governs our entire football that says it doesn't matter if you run a Sunday league or you run a professional league. If your league is 12 teams, you can have one relegation spot. If it's up to, I don't know, 16 teams, you need at least two. If it goes beyond that, you need at least three. I mean, it just should be written into our rules. If you have a small division, one relegation spot. If you have a big division, 20 plus teams, you need to be three, possibly four if it goes over 20 spots. That just needs to be written into how football's played.
But there's a lot of history, isn't there, in terms of the setup of the Football League and the fact that there used to be that one place, that one pit of that one spot that
you have to get elected.
Yeah, exactly. And like, my dad's told me stories about when Lincoln got relegated previously and how it was like seen as literally the end for the city, for the community and for the club. Like, and we only managed to bounce back straight back the next season in the late 80s because we were so scared of being forgotten about and being disappearing off the map altogether. But now you have the flip side of that, where you have these clubs further down who are so desperate to reach that promised land and go beyond, let's be honest, because a lot of the teams, you know, look at Salford, their rise up, yes, it was again pushed by money and documentaries and things, but you know, their goal is far beyond let's get into League Two. And let's be honest, you know, from my point of view, Lincoln's goal was far beyond let's get into League Two. It was let's get up and progress and go beyond. And quite often you see teams, as Gregor hinted at, when you come up from the National League, you're often then at least in the top half of League Two, if not competing in the playoffs the very next season. So that's got to be addressed, because again, Turkey's voting for Christmas. You're relying on the clubs above changing their mindset about it.
There's just also very little between, you know, you can look at the history of clubs in these two leagues now. I mean, you've got Harrogate Town come up for the first time, Salford come up for the first time, Sutton United come up for the first time, Forest Green Rovers at the top of the league. These are historically non-league clubs that have had some a bit of backing and got in. And the counterweight to that is a lot of kind of historic clubs that are languishing in the, or they're not even languishing, they're thriving often, but they still can't get up through division. So absolutely, mate, if it was down to me, there would be three places, undoubtedly. But I mean, there doesn't seem to be any prospect of that changing anytime soon, unfortunately.
Well, we've been discussing money in football, and the Championship has had big news this week in terms of points deductions handed down to both Derby County and Reading. Reading lose 6 points, the EFL determining that they lost £57.8 million between 2017 and 2021. The limit, of course, strangely, is 39 million. So you can lose that much. But they do have a further 6 point deduction suspended until the end of next season, provided they comply with a business plan that includes player spending. They are now 4 points above the relegation places and, of course, still under a transfer embargo. Derby County deducted a further 9 points after admitting breaches of the EFL accounting rules. They've been docked 12 points already for entering administration in September. They agree to the dismissal of their appeal against that decision. The latest penalty, though, leaves Wayne Rooney's side on -3 points. They are 18 points from safety now at the foot of the table. Clearly concerns over relegation, particularly for Derby County, but do you have any concerns for the future of either of these clubs, Gregor?
Well, there has to be concerns of over Derby County's future until they come out of administration and a buyer's found. But I think actually drawing a line under this whole fiasco really is a positive for Derby. It all but consigns them to League One. But clubs have done that before in the past. They've gone down to the third tier, you know, cleared the decks and been able to rise from that point again. The difference between Derby and Reading, you know, they both tried to sell their stadiums to kind of get around the profit and sustainability regulations. Derby tried a hell of a lot more of kind of inventive accounting practices to avoid this day, really. And, you know, the difference in kind of tone between the two clubs as well has been pretty striking. And Reading were basically saying, in their statement, thank, you know, I think we need to thank the EFL for their engagement, and we'll learn from this. And Reading will be fine this season. Derby were kind of characterised by a kind of arrogance and, you know, a desire to avoid the stay at all costs. You know, Welly tried desperately to get into the Premier League, and that's the difference between the two clubs, and that's the that's why the punishment, you know, is so much stricter for sterner for Derby County.
Tom, do you fear for either of these clubs at all? And I mean, there was all this talk, wasn't there? I think it was European Super League time, you know, all the fallout from clubs going bust. You know, Rick Parry of the EFL saying there has to be an independent regulator, almost begging the government, please step in, help me out here. You know, looking up to the Premier League, we need to do something about parachute payments. They're just not distributed fairly. All the talk about what's next, even as Gregor mentioned earlier, you know, the proposed salary caps in the Football League, which haven't really taken hold. Why hasn't the FA, why hasn't English football found space for an independent regulator as yet?
Oh, gosh, how long have you got?
Well, it might just be politics.
It could well be politics. I think it's interesting that we're talking about the Championship. I can remember us having a discussion before the season started, and Gregor and I talking about speaking to clubs across the Football League, and it seemed in the Championship there was a little bit of fear and trepidation around this kind of an issue of around spending, around money, and around the way clubs were structured and set up. And that kind of desperate thirst for reaching the Premier League, and how that was starting to bite people who had tried and failed, Derby being the absolute classic example of that. And I just, it was interesting thinking about Derby and these clubs and new owners in relation to what Gregor was saying about the National League clubs and how smartly they're run, and how these owners are from the local area and they do things with initiatives and with communities. You look at clubs in the Championship, and if you were trying to buy and do that in the Championship, I don't know whether that would be even remotely doable in terms of that kind of sensible business setup. Because as Greg is talking about with Derby, it's a kind of clear the deck situation. You know, you're talking about a club that only a couple of seasons ago had Frank Lampard. They were on the brink of the Premier League. And now we're talking about, oh yeah, let's take League One because that'll be good for us. And it actually will be. I actually agree. I think it will be. But that's a bad position to be in, isn't it, for the state of this, the football in this country, that we're talking about a club like that being happy to take a points deduction, be in administration, be desperately trying to find a new owner, take relegation when we're in November, and that's a good thing. But I mean, I don't have an answer to your point about why haven't they brought in any regulation, because it probably is a hell of a lot of politics, and because for all the derbies, there are other clubs who benefit from this situation. Norwich going straight back up, talk about parachute payments. There are lots of clubs in League One at the minute who aren't struggling, who might in 2 years, having chased the dream, be struggling. Wigan, Sunderland, spending a lot of money, doing very well. They're happily plodding along, probably buying a lot of players who should be in the Championship and cracking on, in the same way that we're talking about teams in the National League buying players from League Two. That's happening with the Championship and League One quite a lot this season and this summer. Players who probably should be in the Championship are playing in League One for teams who can spend more money on wages. So for all the derbies, you have the other teams who are happy to benefit on the other side. So you're never necessarily going to get an overall, yes, let's do this for the good of the game, I don't think.
No, I don't think it will happen. Do you have an answer, though?
Well, the fan-led review that's going to be much discussed is going to be released imminently, I believe. That's going to be very interesting. I think whether it's going to, you know, put forward any concrete solutions, and whether football is willing to listen, actually, because it is a holistic vision. It has to be. The thing that coronavirus particularly illuminated was how interconnected every level of football is, every club is. When teams are stretching so much for success, the upward drag on resources and the kind of strain that puts on the rest of the clubs that they're competing against is dangerous. So there has to be some regulation. It's not straightforward, though. I think we all know that. There is a movement. There is a, you know, there's a fair game initiative that a lot of clubs have signed up to, particularly in the lower leagues. That was started by Niall Cooper from AFC Wimbledon, and a lot of clubs signing up to that. They want to see a change in football's governance, essentially, and it all comes back to that. So it's whether the fan-led review can, whatever it puts forward, is whether football's willing to listen, actually.
something for we as journalists to probably follow up on, actually. You know, we've been distracted by things like the Euros, but pretty important. You see clubs being deducted points. Something needs to be done, really, even though it's great for the National League that they can spend whatever they want. And we laud that. Of course we do on the Game Podcast. Listen, that was meant to be our brief introductory chat. That's just been finished. Plenty more to come. We're going to look ahead to the big weekend in the Premier League. Loads of new managers. Arsenal, Liverpool as well. Up next, we'll talk women's football and the Champions League. And of course, Women's Football Weekend as well. But remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, rate us, leave us a review, and make sure you're subscribed.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it's been a big week for women's football. A number of things for us to discuss. Let's speak to The Times' Molly Hudson. How are you, Molly?
Morning. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, very well. Listen, I wanted to start with the FA Women's Super League announcing that they had more than 1.5 million viewers across their TV coverage of a women's football weekend, which is great. How important do you think those figures are? And how important do you think the weekend is itself for that awareness of the women's game?
It was a really successful weekend in terms of the TV audiences. And I think it's something that we've seen a kind of common theme this season. Obviously, it's the first year of this broadcast deal worth around 24 million, you know, huge investment for the league. Huge thing in terms of drawing eyes to the division is clearly working. You know, a large amount of these people that are watching, you know, specifically this weekend, but also most of the season, probably might not have seen women's football that much, or certainly not to the extent that they're able to now. So I think that's a positive. I suppose the negative that comes with that is that the attendances actually in grounds have probably been a little bit disappointing. And I think that's something that the FA are aware of, that now people can sit at home when it's a bit cold, a bit raining, watch it all on the TV. Whereas back in the day, you know, even a few seasons ago, you literally had to go to games because there was no coverage. So I think in the long run, it will be hugely, hugely beneficial, both in terms of TV audiences and attendances. Whereas for now, I think certainly the audiences on TV are more of a positive so far this season than actual in-person attendances.
I know it sounds strange, but is the TV audience almost bigger for the game in that it will bring in the sponsorship and the advertising and the revenue that actually drives football? You know, we see in the men's game, broadcasting drives the money in that sport, and it could be the same for the women's side of the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think literally in terms of the broadcast deal and the money that that's given each of the teams in the division this season, that's a huge step forward, because for a team like, you know, Chelsea, for example, it doesn't make the hugest difference, arguably, because they have investment from the men's team. But then you look at, you know, teams like a Birmingham City women in the Women's Super League, the investment that they've had from the broadcast deal can go directly into the team and really help them kind of bridge that gap in terms of competitiveness. So I think that's a huge positive. And I think ultimately the FA hope that some of those people watching the Women's Super League for the first time on TV will eventually drip down into bums on seats in the stadiums. So I think they're sort of aware that it may not be an immediate process in seeing that kind of come to fruition, but hopefully in years to come it will be.
Molly, how much do you think the stadiums themselves play a bit of a part? Because we've talked before, and you've written articles about some of the facilities and things being really detrimental to the progress of the women's game. And we've seen previously North London derbies being played at the Emirates and things like that. How much of a difference do you think that might make in terms of getting fans to come to games, in terms of being like, hey, come and watch Arsenal v Tottenham at the Emirates, rather than watching it somewhere else, you know, that is a much smaller ground with lesser facilities and is probably a bit less of a draw?
It's as though you've read the column that I'm filing for. I think one of the sort of strange coincidences this weekend was the North London Derby was played at the Hive, the home of Tottenham Women. It was a new attendance record for the Hive, for the women's team, which is great. But then you compare that to the, I don't know, 38,000, I think it was, that went to watch the North London Derby at a previous women's football weekend that was held at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And obviously it's a huge drop off. And yes, part of that was the fact that the new stadium had only just opened. So, you know, some of those fans were just going to see the stadium. But, you know, it was a brilliant atmosphere that day. There was a proper away section, whereas at the Hive, there wasn't at the weekend. Really simple things like it costs £8 to park your car at the Hive. And the Hive is not the easiest place. The Hive is not the easiest place to get to. So a lot of people will drive rather than just getting the tube, as you could to say, for example, the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, because it's, you know, perfectly placed in terms of public transport. So I think little things like that made a huge difference. If you get up on a Saturday and just think, oh, I might go to a game, and then you look and, you know, the Hive is an hour away and it's a walk and a train, and it's just going to put people off. It's going to make people think, well, I'll watch that live on BBC One.
Let's talk about the action that we've had already this week. Arsenal really on the brink of qualification for the knockout stages in the Women's Champions League. I'm not going to pronounce this properly. I tried on the radio last night. Kozia? Is that right, Molly?
I'm not going to lie. I don't have a clue.
See, that is a privilege of people that work in print, isn't it? You don't have to just spell it correctly and you get away with it. Well, however it's pronounced, Arsenal beat them 3-0. That's probably a bit too rude for the podcast. I apologise if I did not pronounce that correctly, but it was a 3-0 win for Arsenal. And, you know, Barcelona running away with a group, you feel, but Arsenal look like they're going to qualify. We've got Chelsea to come a little bit later on. We expect them to beat Servette, who are bottom of the table without a point as yet. You watched the Arsenal game. How impressive was the performance?
Yeah, I think it was pretty impressive just because of the kind of week that Arsenal have had. They dropped points in that North London derby that we were just talking about. That was disappointing for them. The first points they dropped in the Women's Super League this season. Obviously, also found out this week that during that game, Leah Williamson had suffered what they called a significant hamstring injury, looking likely to rule her out for at least the rest of the year. And she's such a pivotal player at the heart of defence in the way that Arsenal like to play. So I think, you know, Koch are bottom of the group. They've got 0 points, but they're not a poor side at all. They pegged Arsenal back for a long part of that game last night. And in the end, 3-0, eventually the goals went in, but it was a real test for Arsenal, I suppose. When they were 1-0 up, Lydia Williams made a big save. It could easily have been 1-1 and it could have gone another way. So I think it was a big moment in terms of building their confidence. And as you say, they're near enough, you'd like to think, qualified now for the next stage with the top two of the group going through.
We expect Chelsea will go through as well. Just finally, Molly, the Lionesses squad has been named. England taking on Austria at the Stadium of Light in Sunderland. That's on the 27th of November. Then Latvia in Doncaster 3 days later. As you mentioned, that injury to Leah Williamson could affect the country as much as it affects her club. How big a miss do you think she could be for England?
Yeah, she's a huge miss. And I think it's really disappointing for her, particularly because she'd been standing in as England captain because Steph Horton's been injured, Lucy Bronze has been injured, and they still are injured. So you would have anticipated Leah being captain again for these next two fixtures. So it's really disappointing for her. And I suppose it's a big moment for Lotta Ruben Moy, who is another young England defender that played last night for Arsenal and probably will have a decent chance of playing for England now in these upcoming matches. And it's a big moment for her to grasp, I suppose.
Yeah, it should be. Listen, Molly Hudson, thank you for joining us on the Game podcast today.
Thank you.
Up next, we're going to look ahead to the Premier League weekend. Thank you to Molly Hudson once again, though. We'll be talking new manager bounce and, of course, looking ahead to the game at Anfield between Liverpool and Arsenal. Now, let's look ahead to the action in this weekend's Premier League. 5:30 Saturday tea time. Arsenal, on a 10-game unbeaten run, go to Anfield to face Liverpool. They haven't really faced quite so serious an opponent in those 10 games, though. The last time they did, it was a 5-0 defeat by Manchester City. Liverpool, by the way, have won their last five games against the Gunners at Anfield, but they only have a point from their last two matches. I'm going to focus in on Arsenal, though, on this, because of that unbeaten run under Mikel Arteta. The question is, for our resident Arsenal fan, Gregor, how good are Arsenal really, mate? Come on, we know you love them.
They're probably, well, they definitely aren't as bad as what we thought they were after those opening three games. And I don't think they're probably quite as good as, you know, some people might be starting to think they are now after this run of, as you say, 10 games. I think the one thing that's kind of striking is that From the 11 players that started their opening day defeat to Brentford, only Smith Rowe, Sammy Lokonga, and Ben White started their last game against Watford. So they've rung the changes, basically. Mm. They've got all their new signings into the team, and I think it's huge as well that Aubameyang is back on song, because they need him. They really do need him. Last season he 10 Premier League goals, which for someone of his ability is not what you would expect, and he's got 7 already this season. And also think the form of Lacazette has been very important for him too.
When you're playing for a new contract,
I was just going to say, yeah, it's uncanny.
You'll be amazed what these players will do when their contract's about to expire. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a delicate one to kind of.
Now tell the truth, when your contract was coming to an end, how much did it
was always
to your...
coming to an end.
Always had less than a year left. Yeah, I understand what you mean. Go on.
You know, the re-emergence of those two, because they were really, you know, they were awful last season. I think the main thing is that Arsenal, it's not, I've said this before, that Arsenal have now able to get their best 11 on the pitch regularly, and I think what we're seeing is something closer to what they're capable of. And it's been a huge turnaround for Arteta. We do have to give him credit, because after those opening three games, the storm clouds were gathering. He was under huge pressure. His kind of response, you know, what was it he called that, the 15 days, the kind of the break that he had, he said it was the best 15 days of his managerial career, his time at the club. And whatever he did, you know, even just if it's just keeping the atmosphere positive and lightening the mood, I think he deserves credit for. But the main thing, it's not rocket science, the main thing is they've got their best players on the pitch now, and we're seeing better performances as a result.
They look well coached as well, to give him even more credit than you did there. Best players on the pitch, but they definitely seem to have a plan, unlike other clubs I won't mention. This weekend, though, I know the Arsenal fans have a lot of expectation. They maybe don't expect their team to go and win away from home at Anfield, but in recent years, a game like this would strike real fear into the hearts of Arsenal fans. So is this weekend all about the manner of their performance rather than the result, Tom?
Yes, I think so. In as long as you can forget the disaster it always is for any fan when your team loses. Yes, I think you're right. It can be about the manner of the performance, because the key thing for me, both when you think about Aubameyang and Lacazette, your senior star players and some of these younger players, and you said it there, Hugh, fear going into these games. That's been so prevalent under Arteta, isn't it? For Arsenal fans, going into these big games, you're thinking, oh God, no, not again. Thing they've got now is confidence. They look confident as a team. Both these young players, Saka, Smith Rowe, the new signings, Ben White, Ramsdale, and your senior stars, Aubameyang, Lacazette, they all look confident. They all look like they believe in what's happening, what's gone on off the pitch, on the training ground, and they look like they're going onto the pitch with a plan. And so when you go into a game like Liverpool at Anfield, that is an absolutely massive thing, because if you do go 1-0 down early on, you need that confidence. You need that wherewithal to be like, okay, hang on. Remember, we're on a 10-game unbeaten run here. We don't have to panic. We don't have to give this away. We don't have to be 3-0 down at half-time and trudging off heads down. So, yeah, I think you're right that manner of the performance comes into it in a big way, because it might then turn out that they could get a draw. You know, Liverpool have been brilliant at times this season, but they have also shown that they're not quite that unbeatable, terrifying Liverpool that they have been in the past few seasons.
And after their struggles from set of plays against West Ham, they're coming against the best team in the league. The six of Arsenal's 13 goals have come from set of plays this season. They obviously signed Nicolas Jover from Man City, set piece coach in the summer, and it's bearing fruit so far. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch this weekend.
I often reflect negatively when we go into games, as you know, and I start asking, well, if they lose, then what? So I thought I'd be kind to Arsenal this weekend, especially as they're on a long unbeaten run, and ask what it means if they beat Liverpool away and they win the game. Is it going to be time for us to take them seriously?
I think so. I'd like to think a lot of us are already taking them seriously. As Gregor says, you know, a lot of credit for Arteta for what he's done in recent weeks. It depends what you mean by seriously, doesn't it? If they beat Liverpool, a lot of the...
Top four?
No.
Top six?
Top six, yeah.
Yeah.
I think top six, which I think is serious. Mm. You know, we discussed, didn't we, previously on a previous show, that if Arsenal can get back to competing in and around that top six and that big six narrative, then that is real progress for Arteta this season. If he can get a cohesive team, as Gregor says, a consistent starting 11, this is my best team, particularly in defence. Again, something that I think is so important. All the chopping and changing, different systems. This is my goalkeeper. This is my back four. That's a massive, massive thing. And if they're competing in the top six, that's real progress. And I think if they can get any kind of result against Liverpool, even if it's a draw, I think we can then take it seriously that they're competitors for the top six.
I think they're one of half a dozen teams that are competing for fourth to sixth. I know that doesn't fit, but, but you know what I mean? They could, you know, the top three, we know who they're going to be, I would say. Mm. And then you've got West Ham, Arsenal, Spurs.
Man United could be
Man
fourth.
United, I suppose, just about in there. You know, it's strange this season. You just look at Brighton in there and Wolves are in eighth, but you know, you wouldn't imagine that when you come to May, they're going to be there. So they're absolutely, you know, they are one of a handful, I'll say then, of clubs that could be, that will be aiming for fourth.
But yeah, when it comes to Mikel Arteta and what might be ahead over the coming weeks, I've started to think that he needs to sort of arrest the roller coaster a little bit, because he has had good runs before. Mm. Then they go on a terrible run. They're in a good run right now. And I just think if it keeps happening, then we start to build a narrative that, a bit like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, well, he's not going to be the man for long term. Mm. You know, he might be a decent enough coach to get him on a decent run, but the consistency over a season or over two is not there. And that's the only thing that I worry about, because I do think he is a good coach. Like, you can see, and I've said it before, what Arsenal are trying to do, which is a big thing for any Manchester United fan, really. The question is, really, does he need to make sure there's no long-term dip after here to prove that he is going to be the right man for Arsenal?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, we're all journalists. When we watch football, it's about what you know, I've speak to reporters, what's the line? What are we going to write about, particularly when, you know, we're coming to covering for the game pullout on a Monday? When you're looking at Saturday games, you're thinking, what? How can we take this on? What's the issue? And so often with Arsenal, it's talking about Arteta and talking about what he got wrong. And I think if he comes out of this game without any of that discussion, without any of that narrative, maybe it's a defeat, but, oh, wasn't he brilliant? And wasn't that really clever? And maybe they went 2-0 down, but they were brilliant in the second half when he made a tactical switch and they only lost 2-1. That can be the discourse, and that's fine. But as you say, if it's a resounding defeat, and that then precedes, you know, to what follows is a bad run, then that could be worrying. But I actually don't think that will be the case. No. Having watched them a lot recently, I don't think that will be the case. I think they could lose to Liverpool, but I still don't think that will be the case.
I just think it's really important they avoid defeat, because there's been games in this run where you think they've been very fortunate. I think, you know, Crystal Palace jumps to mind when they scored a really late equaliser. You know, there was a bit of good fortune against Aston Villa, just, you know, that kind of the referee's halftime whistle. Brighton 0-0, I think Brighton could have easily won that game. If that keeps happening, then you wouldn't really necessarily say it's good fortune anymore. You got to say they're finding a way of grinding out points and, you know, not losing. And I think if they did that against Liverpool and they extend this run, they keep a bit of momentum, then that's going to be huge for them.
Listen, it will be really interesting to see, of course, if Liverpool fail to win, what that means in terms of the headlines written them as well. So I think it's going to be a really intriguing game. 5:30 Saturday afternoon at Anfield. There are big games to come at the bottom of the league as well this weekend. The new manager bounce will be the order of the day. Lots of conclusions will be drawn once again, I'm sure, in the newspapers on Monday morning. All three of the new managers that have been hired during this window will be welcomed by a home crowd. Norwich host Southampton for Dean Smith's first match in charge. Aston Villa take on Brighton at Villa Park to welcome Steven Gerrard. Newcastle face Brentford at St James's Park for the long-term interim boss Eddie Howe. So listen, who do you think you didn't even get that one straight over your head who out of the three clubs, Norwich, Villa or Newcastle, got the best boss, got the best value for money, the best bang for their buck when it comes to their new appointment, do you think?
Goodness me, what a difficult question that is. I don't want to.
It's an eclectic bunch, isn't it?
There's pros and cons for each, which is why I ask.
I think going back to your point about the new manager bounce, it's about where you're bouncing from. And I think Norwich are bouncing from such a low point in terms of the overall mood around the club, on the pitch. And I, you know, we said it on the previous show, so I don't want to go on about it too much. But I think Dean Smith is a really, really smart appointment. And so I'll go for Dean Smith because I know Greg is going to pick his best mate, Stevie G, the greatest English manager to have ever lived. But I think that's a really smart appointment. And I think looking at these games, you talk about home crowds. They come with different things, home crowds, don't they? The home crowd at Newcastle is an expectant home crowd. They finally got a new manager. They really, really, really need some points. The home crowd at Norwich will be excited for a change, excited for a new atmosphere, and hopefully, you know, looking forward to seeing this. That's not me being patronising to Norwich. I just think that's genuinely how we're viewing them this season. They're in a really low moment now, and a home crowd chance to get behind a new manager. Also, as well, a home crowd at Villa Park. There'll be some fans in there who will still be missing Dean Smith, will still be sad that he's gone. And they're playing Brighton, one of the teams of the season so far. So that's not an easy game for Gerrard. So I'd say Smith's the best manager of the three, and he's got the best game this weekend.
Smith's the best manager of the three. Disrespect to Eddie Howe. Go on, Gregor, what do you think?
I think Steven Gerrard is going to be a success as a manager.
But do you think they got the best boss?
Currently, I mean, that would be disrespectful to the other two. I've got far more experience. So, look, Eddie Howe, I think Eddie Howe's a good appointment too. And I think there's so many factors here though too, because I think the tools he's got at his disposal are nothing like those that Steven Gerrard does.
But continue on your Gerrard narrative. I interrupted. Go ahead, Gregor.
Yeah, I just think that he is a manager who's got a big presence, and he's going to be a success at Aston Villa. I think all the work that he did at Rangers just kind of convinced me that he's someone who his stature is going to have an impact. I've said this before, for many managers it doesn't. It's irrelevant. It's, you know, you have to back it up with what you do on the training ground. You have to back it up with, you know, your tactics, everything about the new job. I think Steven Gerrard does that, but there is something about his presence and his standing, and the fact that it's still kind of relevant to players of this kind of generation, you know, as well. I think that's very important. So I think he's going to be a success. But I would actually agree with Tom. I think in the immediate term, Dean Smith has got the biggest opportunity of getting a response and having a big impact, because the atmosphere was so, it was getting toxic. I mean, that sounds daft when you're talking about Norwich, but it was getting there because of all the, you know, the accusations really that were flying around about that football club and their lack of ambition and whatnot. His arrival, I think, and I wrote a piece about this earlier in the week, I think as long as Daniel Farke was there, it was impossible to shake those accusations. So, you know, just the fact that he's a new manager walking in the door, he's got a big opportunity to lift the mood and dispel the clouds above Carrow Road, and I think probably he's got a good chance of doing so.
I'm tempted to say Eddie Howe.
Well, you've got to now.
Well, if you look at, listen, you know, obviously I said everything that I had to say about Eddie Howe's defensive record, which I don't think was great, but he had a huge reputation when he was at Bournemouth before they got relegated. You know, people saying he's a future England manager, he should be coaching further up. I remember, I think the Everton job came up at the time and everyone was saying, Eddie, you know, they should definitely go for Eddie Howe. He plays this great brand of attacking football. I've really respected what Steven Gerrard's done so far at Rangers. You still have to caveat that. I think they did great in Europe, but it is the SPFL in terms of winning the title. He also wasn't great in the Cup, so we'll see. Dean Smith, I've said what I had to say about Dean Smith. I think, again, for Norwich, it's a good appointment. For me, it's an appointment that looks towards life in the Championship. I'm really intrigued to see how Eddie Howe does, because I think if you can grasp the atmosphere at St James's Park, if you can grasp the goodwill from the fans there, and there will be loads of it, they can be titans. You know, forget the money. With the squad that they've got now and the manager that they have now, they can put together good performances and good results, and we can see them in mid-table. Again, I'm intrigued by it. I'm not suddenly going to start backing Eddie Howe. I just think Steven Gerrard could be a better manager than him, but we need to see that longevity, like Gregor says. Dean Smith, I've seen enough. I think Eddie Howe's a better boss than him.
But how do we think Eddie Howe's going to approach this, though? Because you know, you're talking about his defensive record.
I think do the play like Leeds United.
Really?
If you really want to harness St James's Park, you throw the kitchen sink at Brentford. If you lose 1-0 at home, everyone says, we had 20 shots. We went for it. And look, it's his first game. So the things will get better. The team will gel. So for the first game out, pepper the goal. Absolutely pepper the goal. Why not?
I'm not disagreeing with you, but in their position.
You tell the players shoot on sight.
But you do forget, don't you, and we have to keep coming back to this, with Newcastle, because it's got a bit of a fairy tale going on with dreams about buying all these players, and Martin Hardy's written a piece today about them looking at some big name players in Serie A, you know, at Lazio, at Inter Milan, that they're going to target in January. And my God, do they need them? But they are really, really in the relegation scrap. And Gregor, you spoke to Simon Francis, who was with Howe at Bournemouth, and he was kind of saying, you know, don't do him down too much on defensive ability in terms of coaching, and that he's actually quite astute when it comes to his defensive tactics. So I'm half wondering whether
he took the blame on himself. It wasn't the coach, it was me.
I'll leave that up to you to work out. But whether we're going to see a new Eddie Howe now, we're going to see a new resolute, hard to beat Eddie Howe. I don't know. What do you reckon, Greg?
No, I'm with you. I think he needs to get bums off seats. I think I think that's, you know, clearly needs to get some points, but I think seeing a kind of a shift away from what they have had to endure for so many years at St James's Park is important, and I think it'll help the fans get behind them. We should point out as well, they're playing a Brentford team that lost the last four games. Watched a bit of their game against Burnley a few weeks back, and every time Burnley turned them, they looked all at sea. Ashley Westwood just kept turning balls down the channels, and, you know, getting Callum Wilson running in behind the back three there. I think Newcastle have got a chance.
Finally on this, Gregor, I know you love predictions, so I thought I'd bring this one back. Where do we think each of these teams will finish under their new managers? Norwich under Dean Smith, where will they finish?
19th.
Gregor?
Yeah, 19th.
I'll go 20th.
Really stick the boot in.
Aston Villa under Steven Gerrard, where will they finish?
14th.
12th.
Yeah, I think 11th, 12th.
I thought Gregor was going to say 6th. Europa League run.
11th, 12th, I think that's where Aston Villa will be. He's just getting his, you know, feet under the desk. Newcastle under Eddie Howe. Tom?
17th.
Is that survival? Yeah it is. Just.
I was going to say that, but I'll go 16th then.
16th. I'm tempted to say 16th as well. Yeah. 15th, 16th. I think they'll have goals in them. As I say, play like Leeds United. Just use the Leeds United blueprint. Don't worry about losing games. Seriously.
No, I know, but the Leeds...
Win 1-3 and you're going to stay up.
No, I agree from that point of view. But the Leeds United blueprint does take a hell of a lot of work, and he doesn't have that time. So that's why I just slightly wonder whether we're going to see Eddie Howe Mark II. The cautious years, but I could be completely wrong.
Oh, I would love it if he shows up and he plays like Roy Hodgson. Absolutely brilliant if Eddie Howe's. That's what he's learned when he went to see Diego Simeone at Atletico, etc. No, it would be sensational. And I wonder if he'll change his manner on the touchline as well. Will he be wearing a suit? You know, it's the new age of
it could be.
Yeah,
could be.
New age of Newcastle.
But that's the other thing as well. You've got to kind of be seen, haven't you, at St James's to be part of it, part of the kind of excitement on the touchline.
Tracksuit
gives you more
long
flexibility.
Coat. Yeah.
More chance to move up and down the touchline.
I see.
That's the important
thing. There's going to be one of these, isn't there, at one point, just waving to the crowd. Come on.
Got to do the arms in the air, wave to the crowd. Actually, Gregor, did you ever do that to any crowd?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it after a tackle?
No.
Did you smash someone, leave them in a heap, and then get up and go, yeah, come on then?
It must be a great feeling. I always think it must be a great feeling, like the equivalent of being like a rock star, just turning to a crowd and giving them the big arms up and them all, you know, in unison, going, yeah, come on.
No, never after tackle. That should be a fine.
Absolutely. That should be a fine, should it?
Oh. What about winning a corner late on or something like that? down the line, cross straight into a defender, won a corner. Yeah, come on.
So it's always a centre back when they win the corner. Go on the little mazy run, have a smash. It comes off a player, goes into the third row, and then they go, yeah, it's a corner. Come on. And everyone goes, yeah. Anyway, we'll see if that happens at St James's Park, whether Fabian Scher will have a little mazy run and try and knock one in from 30 yards. We'll see. Gregor Robertson, Tom Clark, thank you for being with me for the past hour. Thank you all for listening as well. We'll be back on Monday. Remember, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times for more of our award-winning journalism. If you sign up today, you'll get yourself 1 month free. Go online, check it out. It's thetimes.co.uk/thegame. So many great games coming this weekend in the Premier League. We'll react to them all on Monday. We'll see you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.